Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, thanks for having me back today.
Ted, you know, we were just chatting off air, and we're going, the Canadian economy, what's holding it up? Well, we have retail investors, we have the exchanges, the TSX and CSE, the industrial policy. You say the feds now are even pro-mining, although every time I hear news about it, they're rejecting some mine proposal. But what's missing? What's missing to keep the Canadian economy from falling into recession like the UK and Japan just have?
Well, it's an interesting way of putting it because, you know, I think generally, you know, the economy sometimes can be quite different than the Canadian stock market. But when you look at our productivity growth and how people are feeling about their economic prospects, right, I think people are starting to understand that something is missing in the Canadian economy. You know, we've been riding the real estate wave now for a while, okay? And the latest kind of trick, I'll call it a trick, but the policy boost that the Ottawa has offered has been immigration, and immigration's always been a part of the economy. But really, what I think is also missing is a vibrant public market, stock market, along with a very invigorated entrepreneurial class. And that's not to downplay the existing entrepreneurs in Canada and the innovation that's happening in Canada, but in terms of it getting up to a different level, I think there's room for policymakers to focus on. So what am I saying here? Like, let's just bring this back because you framed it, Jim, as the economy. And I think for Canadians, that is the right way to look at it. How are we going to juice our economy? Like, get it going again, right? Like I don't think it's a stretch to say that the Canadian economy is kind of blah right now, okay? Maybe it's growing, and maybe we haven't gone into recession. Maybe we have. You always find out at the, you know, later whether some organization has declared it a recession. The fact of the matter is the average Canadian is in a recession because per capita growth is stalling and going down, okay? So I'm not interested in who's going to call the recession in Canada. The fact of the matter is that Canadian economic prospects are ho-hum at best. So what is one particular instrument that can help invigorate the Canadian economy? Well, it's a vibrant capital market, vibrant stock markets. And what is missing from Canadian stock markets, because it's still a very small part of the global scene, and you know the Canadian market has been kind of struggling on a relative basis over the past few years, and you know a lot of the problem I think stems from what's missing in the Canadian markets. So let's see, what do we have going for us in the Canadian markets? And you hit on three things earlier. We do have retail investors. You know, God bless retail investors, because if they were not still making markets in, you know, and putting their money in to work in the, particularly in the resource sector, who would be providing the bid and ask, you know, the last trade, right? Well, you've got algorithms who are on the other side of that, and you've got some hedge funds. But if it weren't for the retail investor, you know, the market would be really in trouble. But I think, you know, we still have a good, solid retail following in the Canadian markets, and that is supported in some extent by flow-through and other measures that Ottawa has put in place, you know, tax-free savings accounts, you know, so those are helping. We also have our own exchanges here. You know, both, you know, the TSX Venture and the Canadian Securities Exchanges, they're very resource savvy in terms of the resource markets. They have a specialty in that. You know, and the TSX has come, I think, a long way in terms of becoming in more competitive, you know, we should say, in terms of what it's offering for issuers and investors. You know, there's always room for improvement, but, you know, let's just say for the moment that at least we have exchanges that have an expertise in resources, okay? And, you know, resources are a prime part of the Canadian economy. So where does that leave us now? Well, we have the retail investor, we have this exchanges to service the retail investor. We also have some industrial policy. Now, whether it's good policy or bad policy, that's up for debate, but we do have it, okay? We do have a pro-mining mindset in Ottawa in the sense that they have provided tax breaks for critical minerals. You know, one can argue whether it's enough. One can argue whether their environmental permitting is good enough or not, but there seems to be at least a recognition there, and that's better than the lights not being on. Okay, yes, we know there are issues with the oil patch on the industrial policy side, so that may or may not change after the next election. We will have to see. And some provinces are more savvy, I would suggest, than others on the permitting side and the development side. In British Columbia, you know, I think we're doing fine. Saskatchewan, very fine, you know, on terms of the mining. So, you know, but you have to kind of go province by province. Okay. So probably some room for improvement on the industrial policy. But one of the major missing pillars, I mean, that is not, that has left the building, that is leaving the Canadian economy kind of weak here, is what's happened with our Canadian public pension fund money, excluding Quebec. Because when you look what has happened over the last 5 years with public pension plans like the Canada pension plans and the BC plans, they have basically shunned Canadian equity markets, okay? Now, I'm well aware, and other people in the resource industry are well aware of the argument, well, you need to have the best return, you need to have a good return, and so it's good that these public pension funds are, you know, trying to maximize returns. Yes, but how are they doing that? Well, they all, you know, basically have paraded into this equity class called private equity. Now, that is different than public equity, because private equity is basically managed by usually third-party managers who these public pension funds give mandates to. And they go and take money, and they stick it into private companies. They don't trade on stock exchanges. And the idea is being, well, you know, they're illiquid, so we will get a better return, and there's more inefficiency there, and so we can make a higher return. Okay? That's the theory. Okay. The problem with that theory is that it's very difficult to measure that return until you sell the asset. So we've got significant allocations now to private equity in the Canada pension plan. It's over 30% of assets that are allocated to private equity, okay? And this is a huge change from the past. And, you know, and it comes to Canadian equities that are traded on the public market. Now, by my estimate, as of September, it's about just under 2%, okay? That is a really small number when you think about it. You've got 2% of a $576 billion fund allocated to Canadian equities, okay? Meanwhile, you've got 30% of your fund, which works out to round numbers, just over $170 billion, okay? You've got that allocated to these private equity investments around the world. Okay. Now, the issue with that is that when this whole mantra started a few years ago, this was before the Russia-Ukraine war. This was before the geopolitical tension with China happened. There has been a massive change in the realities of investing in the world right now. And the problem is that if China and if, you know, Russia and if United States, if they all came to Canada and allocated their fair share of money to Canada, then that would be fine. But that is not what is happening, okay? Can you imagine if a Chinese state fund wanted to invest in a major critical minerals project in Canada? Do you think that would be allowed, Jim? Do you think we would just rubber stamp that and say thank you for your money? What do you think?
Stephen Harper did when it came to investing in oil sands, some $13 billion worth.
That's so, right. That was
so
before.
That did happen. That was a long time ago.
Right? And that is when we had the period where we had this march into globalization, if you want to call it that, pick whatever term you want. Whereas, you know, we're just going to let our pension funds go pour their money in around the world, and you know, we're going to let money come into Canada. But that reality has changed. That is not the way the world works. We may wish it were. We may be happy it doesn't work that way anymore. But the fact of the matter is, the world has changed since that period. And in Canada, we have not changed. We are still in the old model where we have, excluding Quebec, where we have our public pension funds basically shunning the Canadian entrepreneurial sector. And, you know, this needs to be rethought quickly because that is a huge amount of capital that we are sending around the world. I mean, it's not quite like foreign aid, but it's a similar situation, right? And I mean, and there's all sorts of good reasons why you want to do foreign aid. Let's not go, you know, we can have a separate discussion on that. There's a lot of reasons why you may not want to do as much foreign aid. That's a separate discussion. But when it comes to investing in economies, why are our public pension funds investing so much of our money into foreign jurisdictions? And yes, I'm aware of the, well, we're trying to maximize return. However, Quebec has shown that you can invest domestically and still beat your benchmarks. But it is hard work, okay? And so this comes down to the whole governance approach towards the Canada Pension Plan. And, you know, things like, and the BC public plans, is that how are we holding the agents, you know, the people who manage these plans to account, and what are we asking them to do? Now, you know, if they're not given the mandate to support the Canadian economy in a profitable way, we know what's going to happen. They're not going to do it. That's not what they're doing right now, but they have not been given that mandate. So the first thing that we have to decide as a country and as a province in British Columbia and every province as well is that, are we going to ask our pension plans to start supporting entrepreneurism in Canada to rebuild that fourth pillar that is missing from our capital markets right now and reinvigorating our economy. We've got to decide whether we're happy with the status quo or we want to make an adjustment based off the new realities that we see in the world, where we see, you know, where we see countries looking more inward, and we have to decide in Canada, are we going to look after ourselves and our own entrepreneur and our entrepreneurial class and foster that, or are we going to continue with the way we were doing things, you know, 5-10 years ago?
Well, I take a look at the Canadian government right now is looking at a military patrol aircraft, and they're going to buy from Boeing. Meanwhile, Bombardier makes a faster, higher flying plane that the U.S. military wants. And the U.S. military, in my experience, does not settle for second best. They want the very best they can get. So building ferries, again, we always contract out to outside the country, but oh, it's cheaper. Okay, that's the program. But if you build it in Canada, all the workers will be employed and they will be paying taxes. How much tax money does Italy give us or Denmark to build a ferry or Korea? Nothing. You get no money back.
Absolutely. And Jim, the critical trend I think that is developing here is if you want to compete on the global scale, you have to be ultra excellent at what you do, because every country is now having a bias towards sourcing at home. But if you provide the best product at the best price, and in terms of technology or you know, critical minerals or any service, right, then you will have a chance at creating global market share. And in fact, you know, that's kind of what the Quebec pension plan is doing, the case of the Pope. They're investing in Quebec companies with a view to taking them global, making them globally competitive. Okay? So you don't have to ignore and shun the global ambitions of your public pension plans, but you just have to be smart about it and adapt it to the realities of the world that we're in right now. So our policymakers, for example, if you're going to support a certain sector, and you know, I mean, that's a major discussion on its own, but you know, just having the federal government with maybe a $50 million fund isn't going to cut it, right? But you've got this massive pool of capital in our pension plans that we're just shipping offshore. Now, again, we have to be careful. We need to have a governance structure in place that demands high returns, excellent returns, you know, not the type of boondoggle we saw with the Canada app, right? No, you need strong governance structures in place. And, you know, we just don't have that right now. You know, I see these the pension, you know, the pension plan and the bank account go to parliamentary committees, and you know, the questions that our representatives ask are usually, you know, 9 out of 10 are just useless. And it's really up to our members of parliament, the ones that we pay good money to up their game. Okay, and they haven't upped their game. And you know, and it's not just Canada; it's the same in other Western democracies. So everyone needs to up their game here. And you know, there's of course always the temptation for politicians to gravitate to the most emotional issue, so they don't have to deal with the hard stuff. I'm sorry, Justin Trudeau, Pierre Poilievre, Jagmeet Singh, you have to deal with the hard stuff. You have to get your head around things like, what do we want to do with our public pension plan money? Are we managing it smartly? Are my MPs that I've appointed to the oversight committees in the House of Commons, are they asking good questions or are they asking stupid questions? You know, we need a complete shakeup, Jim, right? You know, right from the policymakers, you know, I would say as a starting point, you know, to get their heads around what they want these public pension plans to do, and then they've got to give the public pension plans the mandate. So while it's, you know, it would be easy to kind of criticize the Canada Pension Plan, I think, you know, for its strategy, you can't, because they haven't been given the mandate to do anything else. They're just doing what they've been told to do. The question is, our politicians need to be asked, is this smart, you know, for us to just let the Canada Pension Plan, you know, allocate, you know, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars around the world to entrepreneurs outside of Canada, while, you know, we leave, you know, basically in Canada, I think the private equity allocation in Canada, I think, was like 1%, right? Like, come on, right? So, I mean, maybe if Canadians are happy with that, then we've got the magic formula. That's what's happening. But let's bring it back to our economy. How many Canadians feel really good about the vibrancy of our economy? And, you know, let's just square those two situations, capital exodus from our public plans around the world, to how this, you know, how we feel about the growth prospects of Canada's domestic economy.
Oh, in Canada, we're awash in natural gas, and we have municipalities now banning natural gas. Does that make economic sense?
That goes right down to, you know, the whole industrial strategy of the country. It is very hard, I mean, to corral all the jurisdictions. I mean, if we could just get the Ottawa and the provinces on the same page, you know, then eventually you might filter down to the municipalities. But we would have to get the provinces focused on this as well. And that takes leadership from the federal government. You know, there are constitutional issues that you have to be respectful for. But you look what's happening in Alberta, Jim, okay? Alberta's kind of, you know, rattled the cage here with their musings about, well, maybe we should have our own pension plan. Because why? Because it's not, the current structure isn't necessarily working for them. And again, this isn't necessarily Canada Pension Plan's fault. It's just they're just doing what they've been told. But Alberta's saying, well, we may not like this. Well, and then if Alberta were decide we want to set up our own, well, there's an issue here, because the Canada Pension Plan has over 30% of its assets shoved into private equity that are illiquid. So how is that going to work if there's going to be a change? So there's another reason for Canadian policymakers in Ottawa to get their heads around this, and to get their heads around it now.
We'll have more from Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, what are insiders doing right now?
Well, probably one of the more interesting areas in the market right now is the United States market, where it's, you know, been making new highs. But insiders in the U.S. market have been heading for the exits. We saw some big trades by Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon. He sold, $4 billion worth of stock so far in February. So that is that was widely discussed. But he's not the only insider that's selling in the U.S. market. In fact, by our gauge this week, we have about four stocks with key insiders selling in the U.S. for every one with buying. So that's back to, you know, kind of the levels we saw last summer before the market kind of peaked out. So, you know, it's not a perfect signal by any stretch, but it's certainly one to add to all the other indications we have that the U.S. market may be looking a little frothy here. So, American insiders definitely pulling money out of the market, taking profits more than they're putting money in. And we're also seeing that happen in the U.S. oil patch. We saw a major decline in oil patch insider sentiment in the United States after Joe Biden announced that they were going to put a moratorium on these new LNG export terminals. Nothing like zapping your zapping your sector in the economy than by throwing in a growth cap. And so it's interesting that insiders there have reacted. So we have a lot of frustrations with policy in the oil patch here in Canada, but we're not alone. I think our neighbors to the south are experiencing sort of similar unsettling policy moments with what's going on the energy policy front.
The UK and Japan now officially in recession. How far is Canada from joining them?
Well, you know, as we kind of discussed in the first part, there's going to be this official announcement, if there is one. But, you know, that's kind of a pedantic discussion, right? It's like, well, have we had our 2 quarters of negative growth? You know, like, the average Canadian is not growing their prospects right now. And that's as far as I'm concerned, that's like all you need to know. And, you know, politicians, if they want to debate whether we're in recession or not, I think they're just being distracted. We're in a prosperity recession in Canada. We're there. Right? And interestingly, in Japan, you know, they've been worrying about inflation. Well, they've got inflation. I think the deflator in their latest GDP report was almost 4%. So they've got their inflation, but unfortunately, their real growth has taken a hit. So be careful, policymakers, sometimes what you wish for. But in Canada, let's just hope that we get focus on how to grow the economy beyond what, you know, the fallback policies have been in the past, which, you know, may have had their moments, but, you know, we have to look beyond immigration. We have to boost wealth creation, productivity, you know, take your pick between the two. I mean, they're kind of intertwined, but, you know, we're in a productivity recession, I would say, and we're certainly in a prosperity recession already. So, you know, whether the CDO Institute declares that we're in a economic recession, I think that's neither here nor there.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, thanks for having me back.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com. You can find him on X at InkResearch. If you have any questions for Ted or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask those questions for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.